see a patient who, in fact, was the wife of a colleague of his who was dying of leukemia. And I think I was probably about 11. You ask the sort of questions you shouldn't, really. So when he came back to the car, my first question is she going to die? How quickly? And why can't you stop it? And he was very reluctant to talk about it, but then he suddenly sort of... he knew I wasn't going to stop asking the questions, so he told me what he did. And I always remember it, saying that this combination chemo which they were doing was great, but it had some unpleasant, unforeseen consequences with people reading about what they were doing and doing it in other places in the world and patients actually suffering or dying, and they'd never seen that, and he was upset about that at the time. And the impression he gave me, anyway, is that he didn't believe that chemotherapy was the solution. Mm. And he was incredibly enthusiastic about, as he said, you don't need to understand the immune system. If you can just read what it's doing, it will accelerate our knowledge in cancer. So that bit stayed with me all my life, and that's what I'm doing now. So
I have a brief extract of a poem here by James Harper, read recently at a memorial service for Gordon Hamilton Fairley in the autumn last year. It refers to the blue plaque in his name, now in St Paul's, and it runs... In the cathedral crypt, dear prof, your plaque declares in stone that it matters not how a man dies, but how he lives. A bomb may vaporise us, but cannot even bruise the memories of gestures and acts of love or malice that stamp us thereafter. Beautifully put, but is he right? Was Samuel Johnson right? Can the manner of death not elevate a person? Would you have chosen him, Charles, if he'd died peacefully in his sleep?
Well, you can't tell, can you? But what you can tell is that he was cut off in the middle of developing a huge amount of knowledge. He was on track, as it were. And so it seems very likely to say that he would have been very remarkable if he were alive today and we would all have heard of him. But in a way, the manner of his death does matter, contrary to Dr. Johnson, because it brought out so powerfully... It made one think so hard about the good that a man can do, because you so concentrate on the way it was so horribly and violently cut off that it makes you focus on it. And so it's exemplary.
My thanks to Charles Moore for nominating Gordon Hamilton Fairley, and to his children, Diana and Sarah and Jeff, and to Professor Ray Poles. Goodbye.
Soul Music on BBC Radio 4 Extra. The series about pieces of music with a powerful emotional impact.
I'm Stephen Sondheim. I'm the composer and lyricist of Send in the Clowns, which is a song from a show called A Little Night Music. It was written late in rehearsals. Originally, the scene, it seemed to me, called for a song sung by the men, but I went down to see a rehearsal that Hal had directed of the scene, and it became clear that it could be a song for the woman, Desiree, who was played by a British actress named Glynis Johns, and she had no song in the second act, so we thought it would be good for her to have a song in the second act. Wrote it very quickly, wrote it in one evening, actually, most of it, and finished another verse of it the second evening.
The whole piece revolves around this moment, the whole show. It's why the song is so important, because if this song doesn't work, there's no show. And that's why it had to be written that late, that Sondheim had to specifically know, down to within an inch of its life, what this number says at that point.
Usually I don't write that quickly, but it's much easier to write when you've seen the people who are going to sing the song. You know, usually you're writing songs before anything is cast, and then you cast the show, and etc. But in this case, it not only was cast, it was already in rehearsals, so I could tailor the song to Glynis Johns' voice and to the emotional temperature of the scene. Glynis had a very silvery singing voice, but it was short of breath. She couldn't sustain notes very long, and she had never sung professionally before. But it was a very musical voice.